From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to an early special edition Podcast of Champions here on Sunday morning. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. In Big Ten fashion, I got to see a lot of punts and field goals last night, or this morning, in the Rose Bowl. I literally got to my house at 2 in the morning after the game, and it is now 8 in the morning. So I've been home for 6 hours, and then Dave makes me come into the studio this early. He didn't even come to the studio.
While I stay in my house.
Didn't bring me any donuts or coffee, or not, I don't drink coffee, but tea, whatever.
Yeah. Absolutely nothing.
But just so you know, like, I literally got to bed, I don't know, less than 6 hours ago, and we're in studio.
Well, and I'm sure it was I'm sure it was hard to sleep after that riveting, exciting game. So well played on both sides. So much to think about and analyze afterwards. Just, you know, the chess moves at play during that UCLA-USC game.
Pianos falling all over the place. Yeah.
Pianos keep falling on my head.
So we're going to try to keep this tight, but happy Sunday morning. It's Thanksgiving week coming up, and we got to recap 8 games and do all that, hopefully, very quickly. But if you want to email us, BigTenCast@gmail.com is the email address. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. Tweet us at B1G Podcast. And then if you have the Apple Podcasting app, leave us a 5-star rating and review. We love to do that. We got a bunch of new ones. We're going to do it whenever we preview the Thanksgiving week games. We got games starting Friday morning. So we're going to try to get a time to do this. I know with the holiday, it's a little bit crazy, but we're going to put that off. I just sent a bunch more Trader Joe's gift cards out, so we'll keep doing that. And I do want to show you guys something. I wish I had a gift card, I didn't have a picture. Let me put this up here. This is David and I at OB's, mm-hmm. our watch party, mimosas, breakfast burritos. It was a lot of fun, and we met one of the listeners, Chris. Forgot to take a picture with him, which we should have.
Yeah, since one person came out.
He's cooler than both of us. And he drove a long way.
Yeah.
Chris San Marino, like an hour. Like, it was like a ways.
I mean, it's like basically where you were last night.
Yeah. But yeah, shout out to Chris, who's great. And I was like, let's take a picture of the three of us. And we didn't do it. But we got to watch the game. And it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I had a good time. OB's was great. They let me in early when I broke in. It was great.
9 a.m. He's like, oh, I'm just going to go right in there. So, okay. So we got to go through our rankings and all the games that we got to see on, what was it? Saturday? Yeah, Saturday.
Day of the weekend.
Yeah. A little bit of Friday. We can start with our Friday game. So we're just going to jump right into this, I think.
Oh, and just a point of order. Reviews, we're going to do those next show just because we're on a little bit of a time crunch this morning.
I already said that, but sure.
Did you really?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, you were paying attention. That was good.
Man, look. Look, it's 8 a.m. All right, let's get into this shit.
You're at home. Like, I'm in the studio still.
I'm still tired, man.
I always have make my tea in the morning, and I haven't done it.
You don't even write after games. I have to write. You don't write.
I write stuff.
You just talk into your stupid microphone. But I have to write Ryan's 3 keys to victory.
I write a story after that. I edit videos. I mean, they kicked us out of the press box at 1. I mean, Connor and I left like 5 minutes before that. So, but yeah. Anyway, we got our number 18 team,
Purdue Boilermakers.
And they were taking on the number 15 team,
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Did we think about making Michigan State last?
I mean, they won. They just didn't cover.
Yeah, but my point. Exactly. This was really upsetting. So Michigan State ended up winning the football game 24-17, but they were up 24-3 at halftime.
Yeah.
And then they just stopped doing things. Like, they stopped being able to function offensively in, like, any real way. I think they went three and out, like, approximately, just judging by what I was watching on Friday night, 75 times in the second half of this game.
Yeah.
Miserable watch. And while that's happening, Purdue's just kind of scuffling around, trying to make something happen. But Purdue came shockingly close to, like, potentially tying this game or winning it. Like, they had a couple of drives that went a long way before interception. There was a turnover on downs. It's just, Jonathan Smith, I mean, they have a good chance at a bowl game, I guess. But, man, they're a tough watch. They are a really tough watch.
It was tough. You know, and you would say, okay, Michigan State, their favorite. We got this one wrong. Was it 13.5? Mm-hmm. Michigan State didn't turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. And somehow, and they had a big lead, and somehow they weren't able to cover. They, I mean, they allowed Purdue to throw for 342 yards in this game. Like, what? Like, we've seen a lot of offenses in the Big Ten under 100. Like, to go for 342, I'm not sure what was going on here. But usually when Michigan State struggles, it's because the big mistakes. And it wasn't the case here. They just got a lead and then got outplayed for – and it was just – it wasn't a good watch. This was not a Friday night to remember, I would say.
No, and you kind of knew that going in because Purdue was involved. Sorry, Purdue. But yeah, it was not a very pleasant game to watch. Aiden Childs, I actually thought he played pretty okay. He had a couple of drops from his receivers that made his stats a little bit worse than they should have been. But yeah, not a good watch. But Michigan State, hey, 5-6. They have to play Rutgers next week. That's a winnable game at home. They could go 6-6 and make a bowl game. Yeah, I don't think many people were expecting that preseason with Jonathan Smith's first team in East Lansing. So that's good. Just don't look at anything that actually happened during the season because it was kind of miserable at times.
I think it's like two games in a row they might not have turned it over. Was it the previous week?
It wasn't. They might have turned it over once, but they've been a little bit cleaner of late.
Yeah, at Illinois, I think they were cleaner in that game too.
Yeah,
but yeah, whatever. All right, let's go to number 17.
Maryland Terrapins. Snap, snap,
snap, snap, snap. They were on the road taking on
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Yeah. Maryland's fully and completely broken. They lost 29-13 to Iowa, and Iowa, did Cade McNamara make his way back for this one, Ryan?
No.
No. Did Brendan Sullivan magically get off the medical cart and come back for this
one? Oh, no, he did not either.
Oh, okay. So did they, like, bring somebody in from the transfer portal really quick? Oh, no, no, they were starting their
linebacker,
their scout team linebacker at quarterback, who completed 10 of his 14 passes against this vaunted Maryland defense. So Illinois ended up winning 29-13. And, like, Caleb Johnson and Kamari Moulton, they ran for a combined 278 yards. Like, you know what Iowa's going to do. Like, you know what they're going to do, Maryland.
Yeah.
And you just can't stop it. Like, you can't come close to stopping it. It was, yeah, it was very, very, very bad. And beyond that, Iowa's defense hasn't been good this year, and Maryland was completely shut out in the first half. MJ Morris came in. He did some things. They weren't great. Threw two picks. But he was at least doing some stuff. But this was a miserable offensive showing, horrible defense. I think, you know, there have to be some serious conversations about Mike Loxley's job after this one. Because they're 1-7 in conference. And I know this was expected to be like maybe a slight step back from last year. But it's been a gigantic leap back from where they were last year.
Yeah, for sure on that one. I'm like, this was, we saw the list of, and I think Iowa's like starting cornerback opted out, if I remember correctly. Like they were missing some dudes, and it didn't look like it mattered at all. So this, you know, taking care of business at home, easily covering the spread. We got this one right. So That was nice. They were favored by like 6.5. I'm sorry. This was at Maryland. I went on the road and did this. So, but yeah, Maryland was getting 6.5 points. We got this one right, which was nice, but didn't look good for the Terps. Unfortunately, I just don't know what to, you know, when you have a lot of turmoil on one side and you're playing and you're hosting this team and they just come in and sort of dominate everything you do. These teams did combine for just over 200 yards passing, so that was pretty cool.
don't forget, and somebody brings this up in the chat, good point, Maryland is 1-7 in conference. Do you know who the one was against?
I do. I was there.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Why were you there?
Because I cover USC. Yeah.
Oh, I completely forgot.
Yeah, they were up 14 points, and Maryland like scores, goes for two. Like it's like they needed that like series to end the game. Score 15 points in the fourth, and yeah, storm the field. I was there. I've seen it.
Yeah, you can say you were there. Yeah,
there was field storming. Exciting. We did get a super chat. Sorry, I didn't have the chat. We're just trying to. There's a lot going on here, but I want to pull up the super chat from Scott. Thank God the score didn't end up being 13-9. Oh, so that was I was tweeting about that. Everyone like, and I don't know if everyone remembers 13-9, but there was a point in that game when it was 13-9.
I thought it would have besmirched that game to make this one the final score 13-9. Like I didn't want that to be the bookend because like this slap fight between two like just not very good teams. Like that 2006 game was. It's a classic. I think it's, you know, that was a really, really good USC team. And it was a, I don't know, spunky UCLA team, yeah. We'll call it. This does not deserve any, like, I think we would all do collectively to remember, sure, it was a USC win. Fine. I'm not trying to take that away. But, like, let's all collectively remember no details from this game. I think that's the fairest way we can approach it.
Yeah. We also had Alex say in the chat before we go to the next game, Dave, is a 9 a.m. meal lunch?
If it's paid for by Ryan, it's a lunch. That's for damn sure.
I paid for it. We had to take care of Chris, took care of Chris, or at least I did, because Dave's a cheap ass. But and it was more than the $100 allocation that I got that was paid like 2 months ago, which I don't even remember where that money is. But yes, so I think Dave probably owes me like a lunch now or something after that. You know,
damn. Wow. How much was it?
It was like 160 total.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
It wasn't like terrible, but yeah. But that was really nice that Chris came out and stuff. Yeah, he drove like an hour. We had to take care of him.
Incredible.
Let's go to number 16.
Northwestern Wildcats.
And
this is... go ahead.
They're on the road. There's two teams, David. There's the number road ticket on number 9.
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow! Scratch.
In my old age, I like to take care of people's sensibilities a little bit more. And but my initial reaction to like looking at this score, because I was watching deep into the third quarter and then I just turned it off. But my initial reaction to looking at this score was to very loudly take the Lord's name in vain, which I know can make some people sad. So I'm not going to do it. But think me saying that in my voice, because Michigan won 50-6 against Northwestern. 50-6. They scored 33 points after halftime and allowed Northwestern to score zero.
They were favored by 10.5.
And they won by 44. They covered by 33 points.
We smartly at least took Michigan, so we got this one. Right, but we were talking, like, I saw some of the bettors talking about Michigan hasn't covered a double-digit spread. Northwestern had been covering, you know, they've been keeping it close, and I was, like, getting a little worried. But then you watch the game, we're like, nope, that's what, we got this one right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely nutty game. Not nutty, no. I mean, there was nothing surprising about this. Michigan ran it all over them. Mullings and Edwards had combined 157 yards on 22 carries. That's a clean about 7 yards per carry. Davis Warren threw the ball well.
Yeah.
Like only threw one pick, 9 incompletions, 195 yards. And defensively, they just sat on him. Just absolutely sat on him. Jack Lausch threw a couple of picks. He was horrible. They couldn't run the ball at all.
It was horrible.
I mean, just an absolute ass kicking from Michigan. That was, you know, maybe they were just excited collectively, all of them, by how much money is being poured into their NIL collective, and they're able to pick up Bryce Underwood. But whatever it was, more of that. And it would be super cool if they could break out more of that next week and do the funniest possible thing.
Oh, and beat, yeah.
Would that be the funniest possible thing?
We've seen the chaos in the SEC, and not as much chaos. Like, this is the chaos in the SEC, we can talk about this, helps the Big Ten. You know, like, the Big Ten's going to get four teams in. Like, it's all good. But there would be a little chaotic to see Michigan upset. But it wouldn't be the chaos that we're seeing in the SEC right now, where the people are knocking.
No, but it would be very funny.
So if Ohio State loses to Oregon and Michigan in the regular season, like, they could still win the national championship, you know, they'd still be in the playoffs and stuff, but that would be absolutely insane.
Wow.
Incredible. We'll get to some of those teams there. So we already talked about 15 Michigan State. Let's go to, it's kind of a disappointing team, number 14.
Wisconsin Badgers.
I feel like they were doing pretty well. They're going on the road, taking on a really struggling team. I'm sure it went well.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
Speaking of teams getting their asses kicked.
Holy shit.
What the hell?
Yeah, we got this wrong.
You know why Nebraska won? It wasn't a close game.
That's true. We thought it would be close. And then we took Wisconsin, and they just said, screw that. No close game here.
Yeah, we just won't play a close game. How about that? What do you think of that? Amazingly enough, quarterback play in this game, totally good. Both teams. They both played really good. It was Dylan Raiola, 28 of 38 for almost 300 yards. Awesome. Touchdown. No picks. Great. Wisconsin, Braden Locke, 20 of 30. Three touchdowns, 292 yards. Great.
Yeah.
One pick. I mean, it was everything that you expected this game to be. It was not. It was just not. I mean, Nebraska ran the ball really well. Emmett Johnson, 16 carries for 113 yards. Dante Dowdell, I mean, he still was running into his, you know, tackler as soon as he could possibly find him. But 10 carries for 41 yards and three touchdowns. You'll take that.
Yeah.
But Nebraska just kicked their butt. I mean, it was I don't know. Where was this? Where was it? But yeah, I mean, the sequence right before half was, I think, obviously pretty critical. I think they scored like 10 points. And
10 points in the final. Yeah, they give up that touchdown. And then it's like, I think I walked out of the room or whatever. And then like, wait, why is Nebraska lined up for a field goal? Like, there was literally seconds left and Wisconsin just fumbled it. And then, oh, Nebraska kicks another field goal. You're like, holy cow, it was like a blitzkrieg of Nebraska. Like, every time you look up, they're scoring. You're like, what is going on, Wisconsin? Like, how could you not stop this? And Wisconsin, to their credit, like, started to make these comebacks, and they would, like, put a drive together and score. And, like, Nebraska just, every time, just instantly countered. And they were just like, it's a closer game now. No, Nebraska scores another touchdown. And it was just like, Nebraska was, like, on a mission. Like, they just made a decision. We are going to make a freaking bowl game. This is not going to be another year of, they were going to win this game. It was like, it was manifest destiny or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it was impressive. And I mean, it really was a huge swing right before half, because it went Wisconsin missed field goal with like 3 minutes to go.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So at that point you're thinking, oh, we missed a field goal. We might go down by two scores at halftime. And then Nebraska drives down the field and takes up almost the entire 3 minutes. So it should be 21-10, but instead of being 14-13 and you get a stop, it ends up being 24-10. That is so absolutely demoralizing going.
Yeah, it was like going to be a 1 point. I mean, it should have been close, and then they just blow those 10 points at the end. You're like, what the hell happened? You know?
Well, because Wisconsin was getting the ball after half. Like, it was.
Yeah.
It like 14-13, like. There's a version of this game where Wisconsin is up after the first drive of the second half.
Yes.
But I mean, it was just Nebraska's, I think, been searching for like better execution. And I think this game, you're starting to see the fruits of Dana Holgorsen now as the offensive coordinator. things just are flowing better, and they're flowing better for the quarterback too. I think he was being given way too much with whatever they were doing before with Marcus Satterfield. I think they've simplified things for him. He's able to kind of flow into things better, and we saw some signs of it last week. Still wasn't great, but this one, I think, finally kind of, I think things are gelling for him again, like they were maybe at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I mean, because Nebraska looked pretty good, and then they didn't. And that, I don't know if it's a get-right game, but, I mean, they needed something like that. Like, they needed to bounce back there. So, did in a big way at Wisconsin's expense. We both were on the Wisconsin side of things, thinking it'd be a close game. Nebraska was favored by 2.5 and then just blew their doors off. So,
absolutely. Got that.
All right. This one was a fun one, especially because of the outcome, because Dave and I picked it differently, and it went my way. But we have number 13.
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
And they were hosting number 5.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
What a stupid end of this game.
Glorious.
Glorious, depending on your perspective. Illinois won 38-31. They kind of did to Rutgers what Purdue nearly did to them a month ago. They scored 29 second half points to take this one. They were down 17-9 at halftime. They were down in the fourth quarter, 24-15. This was, I think, both teams, I think, showed resilience. Like, I do think this was not really a game where you were like, oh, man, like, about your team, where you're like, god damn, they suck. It was more like, the clock just ran out. Like, if this one had gone another 3 minutes, I have no doubt Rutgers was going to drive down the field again and score.
Yeah.
Like, really fun. Like, really, really fun. But the end game here was absolutely brutal. And we got to just... So
it's 30, it's 12 seconds, 12 seconds left.
It's 4th and 13 at the Rutgers 40. So they're lining up for what was that?
It's like it was a 58 yard field goal. I think, it would have been a 58 yard field goal, and it's, Rutgers is up 31-30 with, I think, so 14 seconds. It was like 14 seconds left or whatever. I mean,
Greg Schiano does the thing that a lot of coaches do, which is he calls timeout to ice the kicker.
Yeah, so Illinois lines up for the field goal.
But he lets them kick. Like, they actually do kick it, and they see that it's not going to be close, right?
Yeah, so it was, like, not going to work, and they call timeout. So it would have missed field goal. If you didn't call timeout, the game's over.
Yeah, so then Illinois is like, no, we're not making this kick. It's not happening. Let's just go for it.
I'm going to let Luke Altmaier drop back and find somebody over the middle. Because then you're getting... Yeah, then you're in your field goal range, right?
Yeah, you're in field goal range. But he throws it to Pat Bryant over the middle, and Pat Bryant's like, you know what? Instead of falling down right now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to deke this one little dude, and I'm going to run all the way around to the sideline, and I'm going to go score the touchdown, which is what he does. And it was a really awesome individual play for him. Really horrible lane discipline from Rutgers. I think they got so hung up on the idea of we need to prevent this play that they were like, they'd lost a little bit of their like gap discipline and their like, you know, leverage, you know, I'm the final line of defense. I cannot come inside. I need to reroute him inside so that the other safety just, it was a tough one. Pat Bryant scores, then they go for, I think they had to go for two, and they got it, and it was over at that point because Rutgers had like 3 seconds to try to do anything. I mean, it was back and forth in that fourth quarter.
Yes.
I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch. Rutgers went ahead with 1:08 to go, 31-30, and then just allowed Illinois to drive down the field and then eventually score that touchdown. But it was... I mean, I think if you're a Rutgers fan, you take away from that, like, look, we are much better than we were a month ago. Like, we're healthier, we're playing better.
Yeah.
And if you're an Illinois fan, I think it's the same thing where Illinois was, like, kind of getting killed a month ago against, you know, Oregon and Minnesota and not looking very good. But they've rallied. They have a chance to finish now 9-3 if they can beat.
They're like the clear number five team. Like they're like there's the top four, and then like Illinois is like, and they're ranked, and it helps the whole Big Ten that they're they're staying ranked there.
So I think this is two good games from like two teams that I think are comfortably, you know, I would call them both now. After you can't look at Rutgers as the team that lost to UCLA and USC back to back a month ago. I think they're healthier. They look better. I think if they played UCLA tomorrow, they'd win. I think these are two teams that are top half in the Big Ten. Like, I think they're roughly in that range. I think we have them. Where do we have the Rutgers in the power rankings?
Rutgers, we have 13.
Yeah, we have them 13. But I think right now, given where kind of they're situated, I think they're playing better than their ranking in our power rankings.
Yeah, and like I said, like I think this is a good result for just having another ranked team like outside of the top four, like the chaos in the SEC. But Illinois, like they were driving too. And I think they had, it was going to be a 4th-and-8. They got a false start or something that knocked them back. So it was going to be like a 52 yarder or 51 or whatever. And then it became a 58 yarder. So they screwed up there a little bit too. But there was just great. Like the fact that Illinois was able to win that game is pretty insane. And I had Illinois, you had Rutgers, so that was the swing in the rankings there. Resident Rutgers fan, mental health not good, need help. So that's not probably good for society.
This is a cry for help. Hey, resident Rutgers fan, just send us your address and we'll have some people sent there quickly to check in on you.
Yeah.
It's a wellness check. We just need that address, buddy.
Yeah, send it over. Hopefully. That's not so good. Real quick, too, we didn't get to do this at the top. Our picks were not great this week. I ended up going 4-4. Dave went 3-5. This was the one game that we had differently, and I got really lucky to win it at the end. I don't know what you guys did with my bookie. If you guys jumped on there and faded our picks, or if you faded Dave, you'd be doing okay. If you went along with him, if you did your own. It was a bad week again for you, David, with the 3-5. But
I can't win in this stupid league. I just can't do it. It's not going to happen.
Everyone's a winner at my bookie, though. So if you go sign up, like our resident Rutgers fan did at one point, what you get to do is, say you put $100 in, they double it. You get 100% bonus. So you put in the promo code POC, so you've already won. And then, you know, if you go 4-4 like I did, like, sure. I mean, you're still ahead because you got that double of your bonus. And you can have some fun, too, in the live casino. If you're a little tired of some of these games, like David is, doesn't want to pick these Big Ten games. There's a lot of weird stuff, a lot of weird results. We're trying to figure out what's going on. You can go to the blackjack table, get a little aggression. Our resident Rutgers fan, yeah, do that. Like, take some of your winnings. Maybe you bet Rutgers, so I'm sorry about that. But you go with, you know, go to the blackjack table, have some fun. You could play some baccarat, whatever. I think that's a good way to take your frustrations out, not what the other things that the resident Rutgers fan might have been thinking. But go have some fun at MyBookie. If you haven't signed up yet, like our resident Rutgers fan or David and I, go use promo code POC, and they will, like I said, 100% bonus match of your initial deposit, because you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
Beautiful read.
Yeah, so hopefully our resident Rutgers fan can go over there and help. All right. We got a rivalry game next. Our number 11 team,
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
They were hosting in the Rose Bowl. Our number 10 team,
USC Trojans.
The slap fight that was prophesied. USC came out with the 19-13 win. Ryan, I have a question for you.
Yes.
What, among the many, obviously, what was your favorite Woody Marks touch inside the UCLA five?
I think he got one at some point.
He got one. But how many plays? Certainly they only had like one or two plays inside the UCLA
five. No, there was a lot. There were 10
touches inside the UCLA five. And they scored from four drives inside the UCLA five. They scored a total of 16 points.
Yeah. This was Big Ten football. It was 9-3. 9-3 at halftime.
I tell you, this was maybe the worst. And I'm not even being outcome oriented here. I swear to God, I'm not. This was maybe the worst installment of the rivalry I've ever watched. And I'm including 50-0 in there. I mean, from like a two teams that were just playing horribly, were coached horribly, just awful game. Like no notes. I commend them for playing the exact kind of game that a 5-5 and 4-6 team should be playing. But man, oh man. So this one, I mean, huge story. The huge overarching story, I think, is Lincoln Riley being a bonehead. Because there's a version of this game where USC wins by like 17 points because they actually punch it in from the UCLA 4 just once. UCLA's defense was playing well. Don't get me wrong. They were playing pretty well. But if you call like 7 fades inside the 5 when you have Woody Marks at running back with a quarterback who really can't throw fades. I've now watched him throw a bunch. He can't throw that pass. And so you've got like Deuce Robinson and he can't throw it to him. So how do you not evaluate that? Anyway, there's a version of this game where USC should have won. That being said, there's also a version of this game where UCLA just hangs on and wins at the end.
Yeah.
But it's 8 minutes to go in the game, more or less. USC, so they get the ball. Let's start a little bit earlier. They get the ball in the fourth quarter after a kickoff from UCLA, where they get it all the way to like the UCLA 40, I want to say. They start their drive at the UCLA 40.
Yeah,
it was like 40.
Past midfield, I think, yeah.
That drive goes absolutely nowhere. But then the great Eddie, pronounce his last name for me?
Siplicki,
yeah. Who's got to be one of the best punters I've ever seen, but definitely at USC the best punter I've ever seen, downs it at the UCLA 1. So you're like, oh, crap, this is not going to go well. But UCLA hits a go route down the sideline to J. Michael Sturdivant, who just like fully engaged sicko mode in this game.
That was a 25-yard, like, yeah, you thought that would be.
He does that exactly twice a year, and it's no guarantee when it's going to be. But he does it twice a year.
You just had balloons come over you.
I know, isn't that crazy?
What was that from?
Max. I don't know. It's Max. I think if you do something like this, let's see. Can I get it going again? No?
I don't know.
Anyway, there it is. Hell yeah. He gets it down to like the 30. And so UCLA's now got some room to punt, basically, because they're not driving anything on that one. They punt it. And UCLA's punter, who's been pretty good this year, but shanked some last week, kicks one off the side of his foot. Yeah, goes out of bounds.
He had some shanks.
USC once again starts on the UCLA side of the field, which they did 4 consecutive times in the fourth quarter. Then they drive and they score the touchdown after Makai Lemon, great double pass, trick play.
Oh, yeah,
down the sideline. And then Jaden Maiava escapes some pressure. And then they throw the touchdown, which I agree it was a touchdown. Amazing they didn't review that because he was like kind of jiggling the ball.
It bobbled, yeah.
But anyway, I think it was a touchdown, but it was interesting that they didn't even spend the 2 minutes that they usually do just jerking off on replay. So it's 16-13 at this point with about 7 minutes to go. And you're like, okay, well, UCLA, they could still come back. Maybe. I mean, who knows? They've been driving it okay in the second half. And their drive opens okay. They run it for 3 yards to TJ Harden, and then they throw a nice little pass to Titus Mokiao Atimolala, and they get it 3rd and 1. So you're like, okay, 3rd and 1, they can convert this. I mean, it's like no big deal. You just put TJ Harden back there. You know, they're 6'2", 220-pound back who's been, you know, running really well. And you just put him back there.
He had like a 40-yarder. He had a 26-yarder.
And you just run him, right? Because he's, again, 6'2", 220 pounds. You know, that's a tough guy to tackle. What do they do? What do they do, Ryan? They put in their scat back. They've done this so many times. I think they've done this against USC 3 different times, where they put him in on short yardage on a must convert down. And it's like, he's 5'10", 185. He's not going to do this. Also, he's got not good vision. Like, it's not the guy you put in when you need a yard between the tackles.
Does Deshaun Foster know the running back position at all? Is he familiar?
But he's been the running back coach with Keegan Jones for a long time. I don't know if it's some sort of, you know how coaches get their favorites. I don't know if it's something like that.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been good running the ball. He wasn't good running the ball in this game. He was, I think, 3 carries for 6 yards in this game. TJ Harden had 14 for 84 yards. Again, which one do you pick? Keegan Jones obviously runs into the line of scrimmage, does not go beyond that. And then on 4th and 1, they call a quarterback sneak where USC had, I want to say, all 11 players lined up over the center. So they didn't convert that. But USC being USC, again, drives down the field, gets it close. I think throws another horrible fade on 3rd and 5, yeah. Then kicks the field goal. It's 19-13 with a little over 2 minutes to go. So UCLA still has a chance. They yeah. still have a chance to win this game. And then there's 2 minutes and 9 seconds to go. There's a 2 minute warning coming up. You know what you can do because there's a 2 minute warning coming up? You can run the ball.
Yeah.
You can't usually do that on a 2 minute drive where you only have one timeout left, but you can do it right there. They don't. They throw incomplete on the first two passes. Ethan Garber's clearly the moment got a little big for him because he throws a couple of dirt balls to start out with. Then he throws a near incomplete. He throws a near completion to Kwazi Gilmer, but it's well covered. And then USC once again brings heavy pressure on 4th down, and he is unable to complete. Danton Lynn, I thought, called an okay game. I think he probably should have been calling even more blitzes. There should have been pressure coming up the A-gaps at all times against Garbers, because I don't think UCLA ever actually answered it. I don't think they ever correctly like diagnosed things appropriately pre-snap and actually hit something against their zero blitzes. So I would have done that a lot more, but he did it enough, I think, to disrupt UCLA long enough. But not a good game, not a good, well-played game.
It was not. I think the way we had some comments in the chat, Dave covered a lot of this, but he says, Dave, how did coach get a penalty at the end of the half? And it wasn't just one.
Yeah.
There was three penalties. This was very strange. Like, so it's 9-3.
There's so much about this game, Ryan.
Yeah, 9-3, and then and three penalties on UCLA to end the half, and everyone's left, and we're thinking, oh, there's a penalty. We might have to have one more play, and then they announce, and we in the press box, you were like hermetically sealed in there. You can't hear any. I tweeted it was like it sounds like a Charlie Brown holiday special where the adults are talking, like when the referee's talking. We're like we couldn't even hear like who won the coin toss. And then they don't really announce what's good, but they said all three unsportsmanlike conduct penalties on UCLA. And then we're like, well, what does that mean? Are they going to come back out, or is this on the kickoff? And they're going to kick off from their own 5-yard line to start the
– amazing.
It's so funny. USC gets the ball at midfield, and within a minute, UCLA has the ball at midfield. And there wasn't
turnover. There was no turnover. It was just turnover on downs, but it was no – like they didn't throw a pick or anything. Lincoln Riley, amazing. Just amazing work today, buddy. But yeah, I mean, it was UCLA lost the field position battle. The stats are stark. USC started its drives on average on their own 42-yard line.
Crazy.
UCLA started on its own 22 on average.
20 yards.
This should not have been close. UCLA also like dramatically out-penalized compared to USC. They had the three 15-yarders. They had another 15-yarder late in the game on a late hit out of bounds that was not really a late hit, but whatever, it's fine. It wasn't a late hit. I think what it was is light push, and then the UCLA player just standing on the sideline, not moving, and it was like, oh, well, they're going to call that just because the guy got hit hard. And then I thought actually the two most critical penalties were a pair of false starts. Well, there was the one false start on the, you know, the 5 for UCLA that – forced that last field goal. Well, they didn't force it. It was 1st and 10. It was 1st and goal from the 10 at that point. They probably should have been more aggressive, but they weren't. So they kicked a field goal on that drive. But then there was the other one. It was an illegal procedure on Garrett DiGiorgio that was also not an illegal procedure. He was on the line of scrimmage. So I thought it was a bizarrely officiated game.
Yeah, there's a lot of comments about officiating throughout the conference.
Bizarre. I mean, I whatever. It didn't actually end up mattering that much, but it was a bizarrely officiated game. I don't think I can talk more about this, but at the same time, I can talk forever about it. It was there's so much here. UCLA was starting its 4th string left tackle in this game. Fourth string. And USC really didn't exploit it enough.
Yeah, they got three. So USC hasn't been good sack of the quarterbacks, got 3 sacks. UCLA did run for over 100 yards, and they were averaging like 84. But there was a couple big runs by Harden, who looked pretty good. But in the end, it was just like defenses kind of came to play, and there was just mistakes going on both sides. Like USC screwed up a lot of field position, pretty bad in the red zone. But they didn't turn the ball over. And like Jane Maiava, you know, we saw him turn over twice last week against Nebraska, count for 4 touchdowns. this week. He only had one touchdown, but didn't have any turnovers. And that's, I think, the key. USC needed to not give the ball away. And in a close game like this with field position and everything, I think one turnover, USC loses. So the fact that he didn't turn it over, he fumbled once, but it was recovered by USC.
Are you ready to agree with me that Lincoln Riley is stupid? Are you ready to agree with me that he's not, it's actually just that he's dumb?
There's some questionable. Now, USC, and he talked about this afterwards, the whole team was like sick with the flu. In the post-game press conference.
Sorry, I got to do a jerking off motion. Who cares? They were fine. Yeah. They were fine. They were fine in this game. Whatever.
I'm not sure if that impacted anything, but there was a lot of questionable, like, what are you doing? Like, it just...
You're, like, sick, but, like, do you know what these athletes get? They get, like, IVs changing out, like, all of their bodily fluids whenever they want. Like, okay, yeah, you're sick. Sorry your head hurts. Go play the game.
Yeah. All right. Well, we talked about that one enough. Number 9, Michigan, we talked about. Number 8, we have...
Washington Huskies.
They're on a bye.
Yep.
Number 7.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
They're hosting number 3.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. All right, you can talk about the rest of the game, but I gotta address Penn State and James Franklin appropriately managing the final drive of a football game. Can we all stand in awe of this happening? Because on the final drive of this game, they went for 3 different fourth downs. And each one was the appropriate call because you want to end this game on offense. You don't want to give Minnesota another chance at it. You want to really focus on just converting these fourth and ones. They did one on a fake punt, which was super cool. That was fun.
Yeah,
but the other ones were just, you know, one was a Drew Aller run. Okay. The other one was, I mean, it was like a multifaceted play. They had an option over here, but then they threw it back to Tyler Warren at the 3. But just the calls themselves, like going for it on 4th and 1 when you have the ball and you have a chance to just put the game away and doing it 3 times on your final drive. That was just well called. That was good work from James Franklin, and they pulled out the win in large part thanks to his coaching moves at the end of this game. Minnesota was super spunky. They played a really good game.
Oh, yeah.
And Penn State pulled out a 26-25 win. I thought Minnesota, the Max Brosmer fumble was obviously hugely critical late in this game. They're going on, I think they were attempting like a speed option or something, but he just mishandles the ball, it drops, and so that set up Penn State with a field goal. But really, it just kind of robbed Minnesota of another drive, and then they only really got one opportunity after that. So it was Penn State kicked that field goal, and then it was a Minnesota field goal drive. And that one took so long that I didn't hate PJ Fleck kicking the field goal anyway on 4th and goal from the 8, the Penn State 8. But I was concerned they weren't going to see the ball back because Penn State does have that ability to kind of sit on you when they want to. And Minnesota, their drives were taking so long that it was, I think it was still the right move to kick the field goal, but it was tough timing.
Yes, for sure. And this was fun. The end of the first half was a lot of fun. Yes. It was 10-10. So they're like, it looks like, okay, it's pretty evenly matched game. Like Minnesota's fired up for this one. They block a punt. Penn State had some bad special teams plays in this game, and then they had a really good one. They block a punt, and the very next play, so they're in the red zone or very close to the red zone, reverse, like, you know, toss, reverse, flea flicker, touchdown, boom. And Minnesota goes up 7. And it's so it's 17-10, and I think there's like about a minute left. But then Penn State like puts a great drive together in the final minute and scores a touchdown. And you're sort of like, Minnesota had this momentum going into halftime. They get the block punt, they do the reverse flea flicker. And I think I walked away and I come back and it's 19-16. And I'm like, what the hell happened? Oh, Minnesota ends up blocking the extra point and returns it for a two-point conversion the other way. So instead of tied, it's now 19. So Minnesota up a field goal. So that was like little plays like that mattered. But the that final drive, you talked about, you know, being only up one, Penn State backed up. Did you like this? Backed up in their own territory, and it's was it fourth and short, and they end up doing a fake field goal, and it works, and then you're like able to ice the game. That was a killer. But if you miss it, Minnesota's already in field goal range, and they can take the lead. So I mean, obviously the call worked, but I like the call either way. I thought you're taking control of the situation, and you're going to end it on your terms. But I don't know. What did you think of that?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely the right call. So let's get the exact time because the time matters. So it was 3:47 left in the game. It was on the Penn State 34, right?
Yeah.
It was fourth and one. And they run for 32 yards, but that's incidental. If you don't make it at that point, yeah, you're leaving Minnesota an option to kick the field goal and take the lead, but you probably don't have losing odds on that play. Like you're probably not going to lose and not have a chance to respond because it's still close enough to your own end zone that if Minnesota scores either way, field goal or touchdown, you're still probably going to have, if you use your timeouts appropriately and do the whole thing, you're still probably going to have plenty of time to go down and score yourself. So I like it because you're dramatically increasing your win odds if you make it. And you don't, you're not killing yourself if you don't. I think there are situations where you might want to punt it away when you're that close to your end zone. But as the, I actually don't think there's many where on fourth and one, you don't want to just go for it. There's a reason all of those fourth down calculators say on fourth and one, really, no matter where you are and what you're doing, you should be going for it.
Yeah. But I love the fake punt call. And it's funny because PJ Fleck talked about it, that they've been looking for things like this, and it's a little different because it works in those situations because they're not going to do it on their own 34, and
yeah,
he did it, and it was a big play, and then at that point, like the air just came out of the balloon, and but Minnesota fought really hard. As far as the Big Ten goes, this is the best result. Penn State stays up there. In the SEC, that would have went the other way this past week. But Penn State survives. It was a really tough game on the road. I think Minnesota can't hang its head. But they made the right plays at the end, and especially, there wasn't any pianos falling on anyone's heads. But that fake punt was great. The series to end the half was great. There was a lot of cool – there's way cooler stuff in this game than, what we just talked about, USC and UCLA. Our resident Rutgers fan did give us a super chat.
Oh yeah.
He redacted it though, because I think there was a typo in there. But he didn't want us to talk about thank you for that. He didn't want us to talk about the USC UCLA game anymore. So he said it's like watching old people have sex. So we get it. We've moved on.
You're not into that?
From that one. I don't know if I've watched old people have sex before.
Oh, weird.
I don't think so.
Man, I've seen it all.
Okay.
All right.
I think we got one more game to go over. So that was we already talked about Indiana, Illinois. I'm sorry, with Iowa, Illinois. We got number four,
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey folks, I'm from Indiana,
and they were at number two,
the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Cignetti killed. Ohio State won 38-15. This was a very disappointing game.
Just for fun.
He knows the score. Yeah. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
You were thinking it early on. They had that great scripted drive, scored a touchdown early.
It was the scripted drive.
7-0. Yeah. But I mean, really, there were a few things in this game, but I think two stood out. First, Will Howard, I thought, was incredible. He was thrown from a clean pocket, which helped, but just accurate as hell all game. Just fitting it over and over and over again. And every time he dropped back, it was like, as soon as he threw the ball, you're like, oh shit. Like this is going 20 yards downfield and it's going to hit a receiver right in the hands. And it was just that over and over and over again. And then on the other side, they didn't allow Curtis Rourke a moment of peace in this game. Just going after him so hard. I thought Indiana should have run the ball more, but that's not who they are. It's not a big part of what they do, but they had a lot more success on the ground than they did with Curtis Work throwing the ball. He was just, I think he was seeing ghosts a little bit, starting in the second quarter and then continuing through the rest of the game, after kind of the initial pressure and initial, you know, struggles he was having. He fumbled it once. And I think that kind of derailed things for him. But, yeah, I mean, it was an Ohio State beatdown. They really kicked the crap out of them. I don't think it says anything super negative about Indiana. I think a lot of the talking heads are being very stupid about Indiana because they've been very dominant against their schedule. But clearly a major difference in line play in this game.
Yes.
I thought Ohio State dominated up front on both sides. They were able to dictate to that offensive line, and then they were able to protect significantly better than what Indiana was able to do against them.
El Gordo, should Indiana still make the playoffs? Yes. And I know there was questions about this, but with all the chaos, like, Indiana is still going to be in unless they lose to Purdue. But so that's not a question there. This was so we were at the bar. We can you can show us. This was our happy. We're having mimosas. We're like, oh yeah. And we definitely, we were rooting for the Fighting Cignetics. You know, we just wanted to, it was just such a great story, and we thought it would be fun. It wasn't, it looked good early. That, like David said, that scripted drive, that was a 70-yard touchdown drive, I believe. So get this, David. This is, like, this will tell you all you need to know, and I'm going to thank Tom Fornelli for kind of pointing this out, and I followed it. Indiana scores a touchdown in the first quarter. 70-yard drive, go up 7-0. They had a touchdown drive in the fourth quarter for 75 yards. So how many total yards is that, those two drives?
That is 145
yards. 145
yards.
Indiana had 151 yards of offense. So outside of those two touchdown drives, pick your favorite yard that Indiana gained in the middle of the game. Like, that's insane. This is an amazing Ohio State defense. I mean, they just shut them down. And unfortunately, I mean, we wanted to see a competitive game here, and that turned into not being one. But the seeing the punter, like, stuff that Indiana wasn't messing up before, if it's the pressure or whatever it is, they were. Like, the punter, a lot of the snaps were to the right of the punter to go off his hands and then, lead to a short field for Ohio State.
And then the punt return for a touchdown that just that fortuitous bounce. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so they screwed up some of those games that looked like this was Indiana from a few years ago playing an overmatched team. And I think if they played again, I mean, I think it could be closer, but there was also, I mean, there were some bad breaks that didn't go Indiana's way. But to have 6 yards for all of the other drives, not the two touchdowns you had, like, that's a big problem. Like, that's, I think, something that's repeatable. Ohio State's really freaking good, and they could win the national championship. And like you said, maybe there's chaos next week if Michigan can pull some kind of upset. But they looked legit, and I think Indiana's still good. Things didn't quite go their way. It could have been a closer game, and maybe should have been. But the fact that Ohio State's defense was able to shut Curtis Rourke down and just force them into making a bunch of mistakes that we haven't seen Indiana make all year, I think it's a really good sign for Ohio State that, hey, this is a real team. But I wouldn't take away from Indiana. I mean, they've done a lot of great things this season, and they kind of ran into a bus on Saturday in Columbus.
Yep, for sure.
One last one. Our number one team is
Oregon Ducks.
Nice. All right. Why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. We got to do our Pac-12 power rankings, mythical Pac-12 power rankings, and do a couple questions. Is that cool with you?
That's beautiful to me.
Back in a minute, everyone. Alrighty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. You know why we called ourselves the Podcast of Champions?
Why, Ryan? I don't remember.
We used to cover the Conference of Champions.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Pac-12, mythical Pac-12 power rankings. We do have a result in the Pac-12.
That's right, baby.
There's a champion. But, you know, this is more traditional power rankings. So we got to go through these. We have, let's see, our number 12 team.
Stanford Cardinal.
And it was big game because they were taking on our number 8 team.
California Golden Bears.
The big game again. It's the big game. Definite article. Cal came storming back in the fourth quarter. Fernando Mendoza led some awesome fourth quarter drives to bring this one home, 24-21.
Was it a 98 yarder?
Stanford. Yes. And he was very emotional. It was very emotional after the game. This made Cal bowl eligible. He was awesome. Go Bears.
Poor Stanford. You feel both these teams like have just, Stanford's up big and they just can't hold on.
There's a version of the world where Cal is like 10-2 right now, by the way. Like they lost, so Florida State, Miami, Pitt, NC State, they lost four straight games. They're obviously, they're doing pretty badly. You know what the combined margin of loss was?
Was it like 12 points or something stupid? Or
Nine. They lost those four games by a combined 9 points. Yeah. They should have beaten Florida State. They were up late against Miami. They were up against Pitt, and they were up against NC State. They lost all those games.
Yeah. All right. Our number, man, this team's struggling, especially on the road. Number 11,
Arizona Wildcats.
Yeah, they're real bad.
Who'd they lose to? TCU.
This was TCU. They lost 49-28. It wasn't really that close. They scored 15 points in the fourth quarter. Brent Brennan's horrible. He's a horrible coach, and he should be fired, but they're probably not going to because he has a big buyout.
All right. Now we got the Pac-12 championship game. We got number 10.
Oregon State Beavers.
And they're taking on number 4.
Washington State Cougars.
They definitely get the meow.
Wazoo. Man. They were 8-2 coming into this game. Oregon State looked dead in the water. But Oregon State won 41-38. Dramatic game. Didn't watch a minute of it. Go Beavs.
It was kind of going back and forth. Pac-12 champion Oregon State. I argued results have to matter, that Oregon State should be number one in the mythical Pac-12 power rankings since they won the freaking Pac-12. But Dave said no and only let me put them at 10. So
yeah, but they've been shut out, I think, one too many times this year.
The Beavs are awful, and they beat Washington State, who people were talking about, maybe they could make the playoff if they go 11-1. It's like,
No.
Speaking of no, number 9, there's not enough room at the bottom of our mythical Pac-12 power rankings for these bad teams. Number 9.
Utah Utes.
Utah nearly beat Iowa State. I watched a distressing amount of this game.
When we talked about big game, the mental health worsening for our resident Rutgers Stanford Zodiac Killer fan. So I think we forgot. Sorry, I missed that one. But just wanted to know, mental health isn't good. When Rutgers and Stanford lose in like excruciating fashion, that's
Utah nearly beat Iowa State, which is why I elevated them a little bit in the power rankings. And they did it in classic Utah fashion, scoring 28 points while scoring one offensive touchdown.
Wow.
One. They had a pick six. I think they had a blocked punt maybe for a touchdown. And there was a lot of silliness in this game. Utah was down to, I think it's now like their ninth string quarterback, Luke Batari, who might be a tight end. I'm not sure. But Isaac Wilson got hurt in this game.
Positions don't matter to Kyle Whittingham. It's just players.
It was bizarre. Absolutely bizarre game. But they ended up losing 31-28. Their defense just couldn't hold Iowa State at the very end. Allowed them to go 75 yards in 10 plays, and that brought it to the under 2 minute, and then Utah really wasn't going to do much from there. But they tried a field goal from I think the 54 yard line to kind of close things out. They were unable to hit it, so Utah lost, but they were competitive.
All right, number 8, we already talked about Cal. Number 7,
UCLA Bruins.
Number 6,
USC Trojans.
They played, obviously. Number 5,
Washington Huskies.
They were on a bye. We talked about Washington State already. Number 4. Number 3, we've got
Colorado Buffalo.
The dream of Colorado playoff is dead. Kansas 37-21 over the Buffs, beating down. Yes, very sad.
Very sad. What's not very sad is our number 2 team,
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Did you watch my boy almost fuck this one up? Sorry, Griffin.
Yeah, you get your one. The last 50 seconds of the game, there was several pianos falling on Kenny Dillingham's head.
Like, yeah, good old Denny Killingham won this one 28-23, but tried very, very hard to lose it at the end. There was simply, Kenny, there was simply too much time to be doing that rink-a-dink bullshit. There was simply too much time. They had it at the BYU 3.
They could have scored a touchdown. They could have just scored.
I'm fine with, like, you know, not trying to aggressively score and just handing it to your fullback or whatever. But there was too much time to do the, I'm going to dance around back here and then take a knee. I thought Sam Levitt kind of misplayed the sequence. Like, he needed to hold it for a little bit longer and yada, yada, yada. But that was a Kenny Dillingham error. There was too much time to be doing that at the end of this game. And you kind of were thinking it as soon as they started doing it, that it's like, no. You can't do this with this many seconds left on the clock.
He throws it out of bounds, and then they're like,
not even that part, but like at 57 seconds, they have it at the 3, and then they run it back like, I don't know, 30 yards, but they only drain 5 seconds off the clock. So it's now third down, 52 seconds. You've got to then drain, you've got to try to drain down to like the 45 second mark to think that you're going to be able to step back there and then throw it away or whatever it was. And the math was not working out.
Was it math?
So it was just a mistake. I think you start doing that rink-a-dink stuff maybe at the 20. I don't, at the 3, I don't know. Your win odds are a lot better if you just punch it in, man.
Yeah.
They ended up winning. It doesn't really matter. 28-23. It was a crazy end, but yeah, that was some dopey stuff.
Yeah, like the students rush the field because he throws it out of bounds and they call it the end of the game. But then they look at, they're reviewing it as the students keep pouring onto the field. And like Scataboo is trying to get, you know, Scataboo had 3 touchdowns. He was a stud again, trying to get the fans back into the stadium. The referees figure it out. And I'm not on the broadcast, I couldn't even hear the refs, but the announcers were talking about it. Yeah, there's going to be time left on the clock. And so they have to sort of clear the field, and they can't get all the students off, but they got them off enough that they could still, you know, basically a Hail Mary play from BYU that they complete, but it's to like the 3 or whatever, and it's not, you know, the game is over. But they made it wait. Like that was a screw up. That was like, I'm going to show you a really smart thing to do at the end of the game, but it wasn't the right time to do it. It shouldn't have done, like, just this is one, just be dumb and try to punch it in and score. And, yeah, this was like, I'm trying to show you how smart I am, and it wasn't the right call.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that a lot, but that was crazy. Arizona State's a great story. And they're in the driver's seat for the big, you know, Big 12 championship game. There's a lot of weird scenarios there, but if you're, and then our number one team, because we already talked about them.
Oregon Ducks.
Of course. But this is, and people are talking about this in the chat. This was all great for the Big 10. Few things. One, your 4 teams are established, and barring something really crazy, they're all going to be in the college football playoff. You wanted that, and some weird things could have happened. Indiana's safe. They're going to be 11-1, and you know, they're not going to be behind a 3-loss SEC team and get knocked out of that. So that is good. Illinois being a 5th-ranked team helps because it boosts people's strength of schedule and stuff. So I think that's good. The Big 12 is going to probably be a 1-bid league. You know, they're fighting just to get the number 4 seed in there. The Big 10 is probably going to get the number 5 seed, so they'll have an opportunity to play the worst team, like probably the Group of 5 champion, and then host the worst Power 4 champion in that. So I think everything's setting up pretty well for the Big 10 and all the chaos in the SEC. They're going to be fighting to get some teams in. Before, they could have SEC could have argued get above these Big 10 teams. They're not going to be able to do that now. They just have to try to get teams into this thing. So this overall great result, I think, for the Big Ten.
I love your playoff correspondent behavior.
Did you like that? Or
yeah, it was gorgeous. I loved it.
We got a couple questions, and I know we got to get out of here. Dustiny, I watched the Power for. I watched the Power Four. Yeah,
yeah.
He's had some typos. As a smart man, he's a typo had a few typos today, but I understand because his mental health.
High emotions.
Very high. I can safely say that the Big 12 is significantly worse than the other three.
They have inherited the mantle of the Pac-12. They are much more Pac-12-y than any other league right now, which is why I turn on a Big 12 game and I am immediately enthralled.
Unfortunately, they do have a lot of coin flips. Like, they are just a coin flippy kind of league.
It's the Pac-12. The Pac-12 again. I love it.
Speaking of, we have El Gordo. I wonder which conference would have a better ranking, Legacy Pac-12 or Legacy Big 10? So Legacy Pac-12 would have Oregon.
Legacy Big 10 would have all of Ohio State, Penn State, and Indiana.
Yeah, I think Legacy Big 10 for sure still. But
because
that and Arizona State would be like your second team.
Yeah.
I don't think that's in there. Okay, so I think we have
we've got like two or three questions.
Yeah. Let's see.
Oxnard Steve is first. I'll read that one.
Okay.
Literally a shit show. The age-old answer to any obvious question has always been, does a bear shit in the woods? And now the new-age question of, has a Bruin bear named Woods ever shit in his pants, has been answered on the one and only Podcast of Champions, a five-star must-listen shit show if ever there was one. But you know what? I'm going to give these expert podcasters 5.5 stars because sometimes, just like with David's chart, you get a little more than you anticipated. Keep it hilarious, Oxnard Steve.
Nice. Sharding's not fun, you know, like... It just happened.
Definitely not fun.
And David, I think he's brave for talking about it. You know, like it's one of those things.
Now, are these things really embarrassing?
It happens. You know, like
once it happens to you 10 years ago, it's not embarrassing anymore. It's like it happened to a different person.
That's true. Yeah, we are all different people. I mean these teams are different teams from week to week, so we can be different people a decade later for sure.
Yeah,
Frank. Heinrich in Helsinki says the coaches are corn fed in the Midwest. At least Indiana looked good for a quarter.
And it's a
bad photo of Chip Kelly, but yeah, he's looking
a little barren Harkonnen-ish.
It's looking like he's had some of those breaded steak sandwiches from Chicago's like South Side. You know,
there are many things to critique Chip for. All right. This is from RJ from Redlands. A safe space to take responsibility. Aloha, fellas. David's bravery in sharing his soiling himself as an adult incident was a special moment in this show's storied history. See, I too had an unfortunate incident of pooping my pants as a 20-something adult. Mine happened after donating blood. I passed out, woke up on the floor with a lobby of people surrounding me, and trousers filled with more intestinal contents than you could imagine. It was an incredibly embarrassing moment for me. However, the more I've shared, the less traumatic it has become, and it has even turned into a good icebreaker conversation to laugh at. This leads me to my question. Should we rename the, quote, piano on their head bit to shitting their pants for our esteemed Big Ten coaches? See, a piano falling implies that the poor decision-making was an external force acting on these PE teachers. Instead, it consistently seems to me that coaches like Riley and Fish have internal defects that cause momentary but tragic blunders. Sometimes they are embarrassing but can be ignored, similar to David's episode. Other times they happen in a terribly public place and are on display for the world to react to, like mine. Also, if coaches acknowledged more and took responsibility for their shatting episodes more, would the world just be a better and less frustrating place? Nothing worse than someone who lets out a giant fart in an elevator and pretends like it didn't happen. Stay awesome, RJ from Redlands. P.S. I think we all know Mr. Foster had a David episode at Big Ten Media Day.
He did.
I'm for it. The problem is... shitting your pants is already the thing, whereas pianos falling on your head is sort of it's a unique bit for us. But I like it. I mean, I think you're right. I don't know. We'll have to consider it. We'll have to go to the elders.
I like it, RJ. And RJ, like, you're doing something nice. Like, hey, I was giving blood, and I end up like passing out and shitting my pants. Like, you know, no one's gonna like. You're giving blood. Like, you're helping.
I was trying to go to a UCLA football game. That's something nice, right? Isn't that a charitable action?
You're helping helping the world. Josh said Portillo's. Yeah, he knows. Yeah, if you ever go to Chicago, I mean, there's some really good food. I love deep dish pizza and stuff. You know, Lou Malnati, whatever. But the Lou Malnati's. But the, like, get the. I think it's on the South Side, Josh. And the, like the breaded steak sandwiches. Like, it's just like, it's a heart attack on a bun. Yeah. But they are good. There's some good stuff there. All right, I think that's it.
All right, should we call it?
You were slouching, or your camera was moving, or something.
I moved it down again so you can see, but yes, I am slouching. I'm tired.
Do you want to do a yawn screenshot? Should we?
Didn't we just do one?
Yeah, because it's early morning. I hope you guys enjoyed a fun weekend of Big Ten football. I need to get a nap because, like, I didn't even get like a full night's sleep after coming back from the Rose Bowl that late. I didn't endure that, people. It was raining. I'm walking out of the Rose Bowl at like 1:55 a.m. or whatever, 1 a.m. Get home at like 1:55 a.m. That was no bueno. But I did it for you guys. After having mimosas in the morning, that was a long day. Long day of football.
Long day. Very long day.
The mimosas were great. We'll leave you with that one. It was a lot of fun. For David Edwards, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.